Wait on the Lord. Commentary for the March 30th, 2024 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. See, the winter is past. The rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth. The season of singing has come. The cooing of doves is heard in our land. Song of Songs, Chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. As I write, we have passed the vernal equinox. Winter is past. The daylight hours are lengthening, and the sun is caressing everything with increasing warmth to coax forth leaves and blooms as a reminder that as surely as the dead of winter follows fall, so resurgence of life follows that somber season. Soon summer will follow the bright promise of spring with even more verdant displays as Apian angels knock at the door of every blossom with the good news that life has returned and will thrive once again. Dusting pollen everywhere they visit to ensure the fertility of that promise, the petal doors open freely to these humble messengers, humming a chorus whose words seem known to all of creation save one species. All of nature rejoices, and in doing so praises a creator who brought forth beauty in a formless void. Annually, the celebration of that creation recurs anew for all things, but most of humanity has forgotten the words to that song. They cannot even hum the tune. Some even go so far as to claim the tune is vile and that anyone who sings it is a dolt who understands nothing. Rather than seeking to live in harmony with the song, they strive to bend nature to their will, demonstrating their power and control over the meeker realms. Realms that have every right to rely on the strength and intellect of humanity for support, but instead receive only disdain. Every year, spring is greeted with millions of gallons of chemicals poured on farms and urban landscapes alike, murdering flora and fauna in the service of uniformity. This is what heaven looks like to some, a place where everyone is forced to live lockstep with one another, and with those that deviate from an ideal pattern cut from creation, just as a tailor or seamstress will use their pinking shears to trim away anything that falls outside the pattern when making a new outfit. However, what works for a new dress does not work for nature. The poisons kill so many things that are vital to our own well-being. In the interests of having a well-manicured and evenly green lawn, we are willing to destroy the pollinators who make the abundant harvest of fruit and vegetables possible. While people have commented about how few pollinators remain under this toxic onslaught, a far more insidious yet hidden danger is the load of these poisons that have moved up the food chain to lodge in our own tissues. The toxic load includes not just pesticides and herbicides, but microplastics and forever chemicals that our bodies will never be free of until the day we die. How we came to believe the lie that poisoning everything was good for us is a mystery, but it reminds us of the one that once promised in a garden long ago beneath a certain tree, "You shall not surely die." So what are we to do? Some would advocate moving from the cities to the country, living in harmony with creation. While there are advantages to that lifestyle, it is not attainable for everyone. It also is not the panacea it appears. Over 2 decades ago, I had a small 5-acre farm about an hour from the city. While it was nice to be able to grow crops there, I discovered that it was not an escape from crime. It also was not an escape from the mindset of those who want to poison everything. When I had my well water evaluated, it contained over 2 dozen chemical pollutants. When I consulted with the Department of Ecology, I was assured that none of those chemicals were present at levels deemed unsafe by the government. I asked, "What about when you have so many chemicals present at low levels and the cumulative effects of that?" They had no answer, as no one had ever studied that. To my mind, that is like saying because a person will survive being stabbed by a small knife, then they will survive being stabbed 24 times by the same knife. In like manner, one person may look at their golf course-like yard and feel that the impact on the environment is negligible. But one person's desires over the needs of their fellows induces a myopia that has difficulty recognizing the effects can be cumulative and can rebound negatively to them as well. Sadly, if they eventually see the result in terms of ill health or shortened lifespans, it is easier to deny it was caused by the poisons than to swim upstream against the opinions of humanity and its slipshod manner of caring for the planet. Would such individuals faced with a renewed earth that will likely contain insects because they are so necessary to life as we know it, again want to fill the environment with poisons instead of living in harmony with creation? That would be less than heavenly. Even worse, we stand at the threshold of space. Is it our aim to carry such practices to the stars should time last so long and technology advances to the point that interstellar travel becomes feasible? Already we have begun littering our planetary system with one-way vehicles and their associated detritus. The problem of our disregard for the environmental consequences of our actions seem to contraindicate any hope for a heaven on Earth based on either our willingness as a species to strive for that goal or to have the technological means to roll back all the damage to an Edenic equilibrium. While the Bible tells us of post-Edenic lifespans that lasted for centuries, our much shorter lifespans today are not conducive to ever seeing much change before we die. To work toward a healthier future requires a kind of individual that will plant a tree when they are old, knowing they will never sit in its shade. We need to be able to see down that road farther than we will ever travel. Maybe none of that is likely to happen. Humanity seems bent on the idea of conquering creation as opposed to living in harmony with the world we live in. If we cannot free ourselves from the metal cage that keeps us trapped in that way of thinking, the Bible may be right. Only an apocalyptic event will bring about change. Sadly, should such a thing happen, there would be those who would blame God for allowing such a catastrophe. But the real individual responsible is the one staring back at them from the mirror. Shirking one's responsibility for where we are today is like claiming to be an environmentalist but never picking up the trash in one's yard. Genesis tells us that when God created humanity, he put them in the Garden of Eden to care for it. It makes sense, therefore, that there are lessons to be learned about our place in the universe and our relationship with one another that can grow out of that gardening experience. If, as the Bible suggests, that garden will one day be recreated, it also makes sense that how we transit this life and the lessons we learn can have direct application to that future. I no longer have that small farm in the country. Old age and health issues make it impossible for me to maintain acreage anymore. But I do have a home and a yard in the suburbs of a nearby city, and I do what I can to maintain a balanced biome within that smaller space. Even with the smaller space, it can be challenging to maintain in old age. I envy those who are reputed to have lived for as long as a millennium without diminished strength and intellect. Nonetheless, I do not wish to be the one who develops the kind of yard a crotchety old get-off-my-lawn man might have. I prefer a yard that is welcoming and filled with delightful butterflies, bees, ladybugs, and birds. A yard that may not look like a putting green, but is alive with wonder and amazement for childlike curiosity, carries a whisper to each heart, the quiet voice of Eden. That voice speaks, and our hearts answer as we feel a yearning for humanity's sylvan past. Those who have walked through a cornfield on a summer day and felt a sudden rush of the oxygen-rich air the cornstalks produce, have felt a little of the nearness of Eden. Every child who has pulled a carrot from the ground or shelled peas freshly harvested has a precious experience that will always be remembered, because a hard wiring in our DNA tells us this is right. Whether humanity ever as a whole rediscovers the call of Eden within our genes, or we are forced to wait until an apocalypse sets things right again, I will continue to seek ways to keep Eden in my heart. My prayer is that we all rediscover that paradise. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this podcast, which contains scripture footnotes supporting the ideas in this podcast, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find hundreds of other podcasts, commentaries, articles, and links to books by the author at that website. Once again, it's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.